I want to talk this morning about service, about the value of contributing one's time and energy to the betterment and uplift of others, and about how that changes a person, makes them a better, more fulfilled human being, and a better, more faithful Unitarian Universalist. In this morning's first reading, my colleague Don Southworth writes about serving others as becoming caretakers of the soul. I remember an ethics class in seminary with my ethics teacher, Dr. Karen Lavox, a medical ethicist. Her classes were typically very analytical, with lots of reading and discussion about how to weigh competing values and make ethical decisions. One day, however, she just wrote the word soul on the chalkboard, S-O-U-L. What is it? She asked. And we spent the next hour and a half trying to figure it out. Indeed, in my case, the next 40 plus years. And you know, I thought about it a lot this week, too, with Aretha's death, because she was the queen of soul. Not like Michael Jackson, the king of pop. She was the queen of soul, something that Karen Lavox, the ethicist, challenged us to think about hard. Now, soul is a word that some Unitarian Universalists struggle with, since the soul cannot be located somewhere in the body or measured in any way. They're skeptical of its existence. But soul is an ancient word used by poets, songwriters, and shamans from time immemorial. For the Unitarian Walt Whitman, the body and the soul were, in his words, conjoined and inseparable, two words really for the same reality, two mutually arising phenomena. I think of the soul as one's life spirit, accessible, felt, experienced whenever we break through our social roles and remember our connections to the world all around us and to others. There is an on-the-threshold aspect to experiencing one's soul, and often an expanded sense of identity. Falling in love, narrowly escaping death, giving birth, caring for an infant, sitting by the water's edge, lovemaking, all of these can be soulful experiences. But there are other ways to experience soul. Service is one of those ways. I remember back in the 1990s when I was serving a Unitarian Universalist congregation in Pittsburgh. My closest colleague there was the Reverend Art McDonald, a former Dominican priest. He had left Catholicism after 20 years, married Melanie, a former nun, and together they had discovered Unitarian Universalism. By the time I met them, they had turned a dying inner-city Unitarian congregation around, helped it grow from less than a dozen to over 150 members, and re-engaged them with the community. Anyway, one day Melanie and I were talking. I think it was about Head Start, where she worked, but it may well have been about the church. In any case, she said something that I will never forget. Some people have not yet figured out that it's all about service. Our Unitarian Universalist tradition has been supportive of social action from the very beginning. Initially, our forebears were inspired by words attributed to Jesus in chapter 25 in the Gospel of Matthew, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of these, the least among my brethren, ye have done it to me. That's the great judgment's called, where Jesus, So on the day of judgment, whatever that means, on the day of judgment, it's separated, and some go one way and some go the other. And the ones who go to bliss, as it were, are, he says, well, it's been anointed for you since before the beginning, because when I was hungry, you brought me food. When I was in prison, when I was in the hospital, you visited me. When I was sick, you comforted me, and so on. He says, well, when did I do that, my Lord? Well, whatever thou doest to the least among thee, thou doest to me. That inspired the early you used. Now, I know that day of judgment issue is going to bug you, but think of it like Kafka did. It's only our concept of time that makes us think of the day of judgment as in the future. It's really a summary court in perpetual session. So initially they were inspired by Matthew. Later they were inspired by the transcendentalist vision of a world made more fair, more beautiful, and more equitable, both, by an unflinching commitment to democracy. Humanism preached on self-empowerment for everyone. So it is that while Unitarian Universalist theology has changed and morphed a lot over the decades, one aspect has remained constant: the moral necessity to help others, to reach out to others in service. Helping others. Serving as best we can the least of these, my brethren. Not just because it's the right thing, the moral thing to do, but because of its spiritual value, its capacity to help us grow our souls. Now, the Bible is written on many, many levels, and all sacred texts, all epic literature is written on many levels. There's a lot of material in the Bible, at any rate, and most scriptures, all different kinds of material in these tomes, and some of it is very much out of date, much of it is opaque, and even more of it obscure. But whatever else they are, sacred texts are at their heart guidebooks for growing one's soul, for learning how to love, for learning, as Martin King said in his last sermon, how to love someone. Jesus, for instance, who never said one word, incidentally, about building a wall or about homosexuality, mentioned reaching out to foreigners and to poor citizens dozens of times. So we see that reaching out to help others, while not being the only way to grow spiritually, has always been pretty central to Unitarian Universalist spirituality. Whether pagan, humanist, UU Christian, or any other type, our tradition has been consistent when it comes to the importance of serving others on behalf of the common good. Now, there are many ways to do that. Our most recent ESUC annual report reveals scores of outreach ministries of this congregation. Some are service to one another, working on committees, in the Sunday school, beautifying the building, and so on. Many are about service to the greater community. All service can be, is, good for the soul. Robert Coles was the author of this morning's second reading. I do not know his religion. I do know, however, the religion of his mentor, William Carlos Williams. Most of us know Williams as a poet, but he had a day job, too, as a medical doctor in Paterson, New Jersey. He was also a lifelong committed Unitarian. He was dedicated in the Rutherford, New Jersey Unitarian Church, and he, as an adult, was a member from his 20s through his death of the East Orange, New Jersey Church. Now, Robert Coles credits William Carlos Williams with setting him on his life path by teaching him the essence of healing, meeting people where they are, on their own turf, as Williams put it, touching and thereby enlisting their souls. Now, Robert Coles has written more than 50 books on the intersection between service, spirituality, and mental health. Early in his career, he's a professor at Harvard, he's a professor of psychiatry. Early in his career, in 1960, he met Tessie Provost, who we heard about, and Ruby Bridges. You might have seen the picture, the painting by Rockwell of her being escorted by U.S. Marshals to the same school. Anyway, Cole met in 1960 both Tessie and Ruby as part of a research project. Only after many months did he start understanding what made these children tick, what inspired their courage. Service to Tessie Provost meant allying herself with the Lord himself, as she said, echoing her grandmother, on behalf of her tormentors, helping soften their hearts. Not all Unitarians would use Tessie's language. Most of us would talk instead about the spirit of reconciliation or the web of interrelationship. To me, these are just different languages, different ways of pointing to the same inescapable network of mutuality, to use Dr. King's words, this inescapable network of mutuality that calls us out of self-absorption and into relationship. Coles points out the difference between youthful and mature idealism. Both involve putting one's life where their faith is. But the youthful variety is less nuanced. Ideals, after all, come in many forms. Freedom riders and Nazi youth were both idealists. Mature idealism is balanced by reflection. Reflection on one's own motivation. What am I getting out of this? How does it serve me? And also on one's limitations. William Carlos Williams described to Coles how he matured as a physician and as a person by coming to see his own blindness. Dorothy Day shared with the young Dr. Coles her own arrogance, and how it confounded her best efforts until she looked within and came to terms with it. Only then, Williams and Day both explained to young Robert Coles, were they able to get in touch with their souls and with the souls of others whom they sought to serve. This is the design and intention of the beloved conversations we've been engaged in here in our collective effort to understand and thereby begin to dismantle racism and white supremacy, which is on the rise in America. If you doubt it, go see the movie Black Klansman, which Carol and I went to see, which is a kind of a comedy, but it's very disturbing, too, about how these hateful realities are burgeoning and inspired both of us to, we can't let it happen. We've got to deal with it, though, starting here in our own introspective, reflective idealism to refine it, to anneal it, make it strong, make it true. Now, putting one's life where their faith is, walking what we talk, is risky and demanding. It's also inspiring. Consider the Amish of Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania. 12 years ago, next month, a crazed and tormented man walked into a grade school and shot 10 girls before killing himself. Despite their overwhelming grief, the Amish reached out to the perpetrator's family, shared donations, contributed with them, and forgave. A year later, they published a statement that read, in part, "Many from Nickel Mines have pointed out that forgiveness is a journey, that you need help from your community of faith and from God, and sometimes even from counselors, to make and hold on to a decision to not become a hostage to hostility. It is understood that hostility destroys community. It is understood that hostility destroys community, even our national community. That's walking the talk. It's also mature idealism in that it recognizes the need to work through one's feeling in all their complexity, and that one cannot do it alone. You need trusted friends in your church, maybe even professionals. Those people who became the Amish and those who became Unitarian Universalists both emerged from the left wing of the Protestant Reformation, and both came to North America so they could faithfully walk the talk that they had come to espouse. The Amish have talked and walked about nonviolence, about forgiveness, and about simplicity. We've talked, and sometimes walked, about social uplift. Individually, Bellevue UUs are involved in all kinds of progressive nonprofit groups. Over the decades, you've been less engaged collectively as a faith community, but that began to change in the 1980s when you became a sanctuary church for refugees fleeing violence in Central America, and in the 90s, under the leadership of your most recent settled ministers, Peter Luton and Joan Montagnus, and became a welcoming congregation. Now, neither of these were unanimously adopted by the congregation, but a consensus was reached that you would go forward, and people who were not in unanimous agreement did not break consensus, but followed the notion that love is the spirit of this church and moved forward and continued to the conversation, and all of us, all of you, grew as a result. Their souls were nurtured. The UU Association recognizes six kinds of social action: direct service, education, advocacy, witness, community organizing, and transformation. The most successful social justice programs provide opportunities for people to engage in all six. Now, we're not there yet, but the Earth and Social Justice Council clearly has that as a goal. We currently have about a half dozen programs or task forces. Second Sunday, Share the Plate, Education and Advocacy, Women Helping Women, Direct Services and Witness, Beloved Racial Justice, Education and Witness, Climate Action Ministry, Education, Advocacy, and Community Organizing. Answer Nepal and our partner church relationships with Unitarian Universalist congregations in India and Transylvania, direct service and education. ESUC is also involved in direct services and advocacy in its ongoing support of congregations for the homeless, Crossroads Meals, and the food bank, providing meals and comfort for both the hungry and the homeless. The church has also been active in a host of local interfaith and denominational witness and advocacy efforts. Robert Coles, for all his celebrity, continues to volunteer as a tutor. He's written and spoken repeatedly on how deeply he's been transformed by the many students he has tutored and how much he has learned from them. The same is available to all of us whenever we see a need and make the choice to try to fill it. I prayed for 20 years but received no answer, wrote the abolitionist and hero Frederick Douglass. I prayed for 20 years and received no answer until I prayed with my legs. Finding a way to serve and thereby live your faith gives prayers legs. I encourage those of you who pray for better social conditions and for better opportunities for Bellevue congregation and our Bellevue youth to give your prayers legs by considering how you can serve this congregation, the larger community, and perhaps, in the process, touch your and others' souls. If your prayers are in other areas than those currently addressed by the Earth and Social Justice Coordinating Council, stopping pollution, eliminating capital punishment, or some other effort to make this area and the world a better place, think about how you can give your prayers legs and start moving. Get together with some other like-minded friends, petition the Earth and Social Justice Council to let you form a task force and make a difference. It will connect you with others. Give your prayers legs, open your eyes and hearts, and in our tradition, help grow your soul. So may it be, and so may it be here now. Shalom, namaste, amen.